You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 207. My name is Clark from 5cardguys.com and 5cardguys on Instagram. Co-hosting with me as usual is Hyung of Integrity Sports Cards. John's away for this episode, but he should be back with us next week. But we do have a special guest interview on this episode that will play in just a bit. His name is Carlos Diego, and if you've gone to some of the bigger shows here in Canada and the US, you might have already met him at his booth. He runs Sluggers 55, and I didn't ask him this question during the interview, but only as we were chatting afterwards. And that question was, why the number 55? And the simple answer was that when he was trying to set up his Hotmail account back in the day, just his name at Hotmail was already taken. So it suggested adding the number 55, which he just ended up keeping. Funny enough, he happens to be 55 years old this year, and he's been in the hobby for decades now, so he was able to share a lot of amazing insights into the hobby, especially what it's like at the different shows. And small spoiler alert, he'll be setting up a Fanatics Fest that was just recently announced, and we got into that discussion, what we can expect this summer. But off the top, I wanted to quickly get your thoughts, Hyung, on Collect Media, which they bill themselves as, quote, the premier collectible media site by collectors for collectors, end quote. It's got significant financial backing with reports that they raised $4 million from an investment group, which includes owners of more than 20 professional teams. And one of the co-founders is Darren Revelle, who many in the hobby know as a former journalist of ESPN and Action Network. And he broke a couple of big hobby stories like the Cardporton scandal, which I haven't heard an update on. I wonder they what's just, going
yeah,
on there.
Yeah, they just kind of hid that, like kind of like that the Ohtani thing. Disappeared.
Maybe you know what? I'll pitch that. Like, whatever happened to Cardporton on their website? But they've also hired a few journalists to write for Collect. And Collect is spelled C-L-L-C-T, so don't spell Collect with the vowels. You won't find it, but it's C-L-L-C-T. Anyway, your initial thoughts, Hyung, on this new media brand covering the collectible space?
For me, Revelle is a big name, so obviously it's a big thing for the card industry, in my opinion. I feel like we're in a time machine. Like, all these things that, you know... I think will add value to the future version of our marketplace is happening before our eyes. And we're seeing that every week something's happening. And I don't think people, if you're not thinking in the macro lens of what actually happens when someone like that comes into the space with the backing that they have, with the journalism background, and the article I was reading, the main thing is he believes in the collectible space. And to me, that was the biggest thing. Having someone like Darren believing in the industry just is a sign that, you know, the future of the card market, there is a future. And how it looks, it might not look like what we describe as the hobby today. And that's, I think, the biggest thing for people to kind of let go and see kind of where this takes, because at the end of the day, these big players are going to kind of pave the way that the industry is going. And to those that, I guess, have issues with this, the best advice I can give is start your own brand and make a difference. Right? And, but I think it's great overall. I think it's going to bring more attention. Like I said, it's bringing in big time people again. I think he brought some owners as well. He has access to some owners, and that's big. That's massive, and it's a pretty big investment that Darren made in this. I think it was $4 million, and it's just it's backed by, I think, the firepower you need to kind of make an impact in the hobby.
I agree with you 100%. I've checked out the website. It looks clean. It's easy to navigate, which is great. You know, some of these initial startups, you know, they sometimes skimp on the website, but they started right from the get, and you know, it looks awesome. You know, as a former journalist myself, you know, I know it's not going to be easy. Digital media and, you know, just that transition hasn't been easy. We've seen a lot of newspapers shut down despite them trying to pivot to online publications. So, you know, the resources aren't there for community newspapers, even for national newspapers. Right. So you just mentioned, and I just mentioned off the top, that they have a good seed investment, but they're going to probably need more over time. You know, I don't know. They're going to have a probably... If they don't already, I'm sure they have something in mind, but a plan to continually sustain it financially.
For sure.
Because it's still a challenge, right? Digital media, you know, how do you generate revenue? You got to do so many different things. You got to try new things to come up with ways to be able to provide the financial backing that you need to run something like this.
So, I think the biggest thing is journalists, I think they have the perfect transition to media. Like, they are in media. It's just a different output of media, and being able to adapt to that, right? And I think a lot of old school heads kind of don't like that way of thinking because it's not the way they did it before. But a lot of these media companies that shut down is because they can't adapt to it. And I think the ones that do, they're going to find enormous success. And I'll give you as a perfect example. You know, at the end of the day, you're able to take your journalist background, and then now you've transitioned it from a website during kind of like that COVID era. And then now you're pushing more on that content. It's the evolution of kind of like you're using your skill set, and it's just a different form of media. And I think the best thing for like old brands, newspapers, is like they have to almost rebrand themselves as that, right? And that's where, and I remember in the article, Darren mentioning that, you know, it's up to him. It's a big move for him. And I think if he overcomes that of just going in on this, it will be successful. And that's what I believe, you know, any successful journal List can do, is they can make the transition really easy to digital media like yourself and be able to monetize as the time goes by. I think a lot of people, when they start businesses, they're so stuck in the way that they're going to monetize from the get-go, but they're not taking into factor how society looks after a year, how technology looks after a year. That could totally change kind of the trajectory of the way they're monetizing. So to me, I'm not necessarily worried about the monetization for these guys. I think they'll figure it out just based on what they build. And when they build it, new opportunities will emerge, new partnerships will emerge, and they won't really need to. I think the fear comes from their current situation of the way they see the industry right now. And I think that's, in general, if any entrepreneurs are out there, one thing I learned was never limit yourself. Right now, the way you're monetizing right now is not necessarily the way you're going to monetize in the future.
Yes.
And then the attention is the new currency. So if you focus on attention, you'll figure out how to monetize.
Yep. Yeah. And to go along with that, I agree with you. To go along with that, the attention is, it's all about how to connect with your audience.
For sure.
And that's always changing. People's taste change, the way people want their information change. And it's just to stay on top of that and give them what they want. That's why we do podcasts, and that's why we have websites, that's why we have social media.
Right.
We're trying all these different things to see what works and what's the best way to engage, you know, the people that we want to reach.
And for sure.
And that's kind of the fun. If you find that fun, then you're going to be in the game, because, you know, nothing's ever static in this field right now. And change is part of the game. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, the final word I have to say about this is, despite the challenges, the hobby needs more of collect media, not them personally, but needs other people to maybe be a future competitor, collect media, like provide more news. Like, we need to build this industry that, we want more media brands to get involved and to provide different opinions, different styles.
Is this a new push for healthy. Five Card Guys?
I think we could work with them, but you kind of alluded to it too. If you don't like it, then start your own.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, provide your own style. That's all good as well, right? And it's not that I don't like it. I actually do like it, but maybe we have a different way of delivering the news or the information, and that's more natural to us. And guess what? There'll be an audience for that, I'm sure, too, right? You can't capture 100% of any audience.
For sure.
And there's a, I think we all believe the hobby is growing, so there's opportunity there, too.
Right.
So, yeah, congrats to Darren Revell and all those involved in launching Collect Media. We're glad to see it, and we hope that there's more like it. We'll do our part to grow our thing here at Five Card Guys, Cards to the Moon. But yeah, I think it's great news for the industry overall. All right, with that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pat, let's play our interview now with Carlos Diego. All right, we've got another special guest on the pod today. If you're a Canadian collector like we are, you definitely know who he is because every year at the Sports Card Expo, the biggest sports card show in Canada, everyone stops by his booth because it's filled with some big time cards. I've seen high grade 86 Fleer Jordans, Kobe on-card autos, LeBron James rookie cards, and other GOAT players like Messi, Ronaldo. The list goes on and on. Now, he's also been posting more hobby content on his Instagram, at Sluggers55, which has almost 11,000 followers now. So give him a follow there if you haven't already. And what,
thank you.
Yeah, what I like about your account is that you talk to store owners, other collectors, and not just here in Canada, but abroad as well at shows across the U.S., and last thing I'll say for now is that he's been in the hobby for quite a while. So I'm looking forward to
a long time.
So I'm really looking forward to getting your insights, your thoughts on where the hobby's been and where you think the hobby is heading. So without further ado, Carlos, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. I've been watching your content for a long time. I love the cards that go up. I follow a lot of different accounts, but your account, I always love the cards that you post on your account. It grabs my attention right away.
I appreciate that. Yeah, let's start from the beginning of your hobby journey. You know, as I mentioned, you've been in the hobby space for a while, not only as a collector, but running your sports card business as well. So can you tell us when you started collecting and all the way up to how you got more involved in the business side of things?
So I started collecting. I am 55 right now.
Okay.
And I have been collecting for probably the better part of 40 years. So I started in 1977, right around there. I collected Star Wars cards. Ooh. And then my first hockey cards were the Wayne Gretzky. So in 1979, the 79-80 OPG set.
Wow.
With regards to that iconic set with Gretzky.
Of course.
And then from there, I just started collecting in the 1980s. Hockey, Fleer basketball. I started collecting Jordan 86 Fleer from day one.
Amazing. That's crazy.
So, and I've been buying and trading and selling throughout the 90s. But yeah. I mean, you know, and I've been doing Expo since 1991.
Wow.
So I think I was 22 when I started Expo.
Yeah.
I'm now 55, so I've been doing Expo from jump, and I still enjoy it. Expo is still, for me, the most premier show there is.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as I can tell you, yeah. Right?
Yeah, absolutely agree. And that's crazy. I had no idea how long you've been doing it. And
long time.
I always kind of answered some of my other questions already that I was wondering how you obtained your high-end cards, but you've actually started from the very beginning in terms of you pulled them from packs and things like that.
I've pulled a lot of different ones. I pulled Jordans from packs, from 86 Fleer packs.
Amazing.
I've pulled, back when I was way young, I pulled, Wayne Gretzky from the packs when they were out in 79.
Wow.
And 80, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I've pulled other iconic rookie cards, but I've bought and sold and traded over the past many, many years.
Mm, okay.
And I do, I get a lot of my inventory from the American trade shows, to be honest with you.
Oh,
all the tough to find basketball and soccer, baseball, you can only find that in the US. hockey you can find here all day long. You can find anything hockey, vintage, modern.
Yeah.
But hockey generally doesn't sell that well at the U.S. shows.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you're lucky to come across a full showcase of it at any of those big shows.
Interesting.
But Expo, you know, 80% of the people still have hockey.
Okay. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I can attest to that for sure, having been to the Expo for the last few years. When did you really start to, I know you said you've been buying, selling, trading early on, but did you have a store or did you kind of just do it by going to the Expo shows, setting up booths and such?
So I had a store back in, I took it over in 1990-91. It was called Sluggers.
Okay.
I had it for 17 years and I shut it down in 2007. But from that point onwards, I just did trade shows. Traveled, did local shows for the most part, and that's kind of how that built up.
Okay,
right? In all honesty.
Yeah. No. Awesome. Yeah. Like I said in your intro, you know, your booth it's a go-to destination for anyone that visits the Sports Card Expo.
I try to have really nice stuff, and I want to let the people know who buy that higher end stuff. It's not easy to acquire, number one. Okay.
Right.
Two, it's very expensive to acquire.
Yes.
And three, as much as I love to give a great deal, sometimes it's difficult because, you know, there are no deals on Jordan and Brady and LeBron
sure.
and Kobe and Messi and Ronaldo. There's just hardly any deals because 90% of the people are chasing those exact same guys.
Yeah, true.
So it's very difficult. And, you know, people I think do understand that, but I try to work with them when they do come to my booth. Yeah. I really enjoy talking to people about sports. It's not just, you know, here, you know what, we do a transaction and I never want to talk to you again.
Right.
It's essentially like, okay, fine, we do a transaction. You know, I'm happy to talk to you about sports. I'm happy to talk to you about the hobby. I'm happy to talk to you about, you know, a lot of people ask me about, you know, what should they buy, investing, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And actually, I have a number of Instagram lives coming up sharing my tips and thoughts about buying and selling and
okay.
investing. And that goes over 30 years.
Yeah.
You know,
that's cool.
So I'm going to teach everybody that. I'm going to give them all my tips for free.
Okay.
No paying. And, you know, what do you have to do to get this card? Or what do you have to do to get that? You know, what's your budget expense?
Yeah.
You know, it's all about bankroll and it's all about money management, realistically.
Yeah, sure.
That's all it is. And you got to get lucky, too. You really got to get lucky. So I'm going to be teaching that. I've got other Instagram lives coming up with Relics tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I have Slab Sharks on Monday.
Okay.
That's going to be a really good one because we're going to be talking about their new app and a number of things. Also, my biggest one coming is Arena Club on Tuesday.
Okay, wow.
So we're going to get some giveaways. We're going to have some real fun with Arena Club. And then going on, I've got more Instagram lives too with Burbank Sport Cards, Burbank Card Show. And I'm working something right now with Fanatics.
Okay.
For that, which we're going to talk about.
Yes, yes, yes. Right? Yep, for sure. Before we get to there, yeah, no, that's amazing. I'm going to tune into those IG lives because I know you have a lot of great insight and experience for sure. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, you've been in the hobby for a while. So I wanted to ask you specifically, how have you seen things change over the years in the hobby? And is there anything that stayed constant just in your experience?
So that's a really good question. So much has changed.
Right.
One, when I first started doing it and had my store, internet was just a thing.
Right.
There was no social media.
Uh-huh.
There was no, like, basically no Instagram, no Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, breaks, going live. Like, there was none of that.
Right.
I mean, you had to advertise in the newspaper.
I remember
okay?
that.
You had to pay the Toronto Star, like, $50 and you could get a line. Or you could go to Beckett. I don't remember if you remember the Beckett magazine.
Of course.
But that's essentially where we got our comps from.
Yeah.
There was no, you know, there was no going in real time and finding comps. No eBay existed.
Mm-hmm,
so
that's right.
There were no comparables whatsoever. And yeah, it was a completely different world. Imagine a world with no social media and no internet. Imagine that world for a second.
Yeah.
And also the time value of money. You know, okay. What it cost to buy a box back in 1990? I don't think there was a box over $40.
Right.
I don't think there was. Right. Maybe $50 might have been it.
Yeah.
But the higher end boxes didn't even come in until like the mid 2000s when they introduced Cup. Mm-hmm. You know, like those kind, or more exquisite basketball. Most of the other products were very cheap.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember selling a box over $100 for years in the 90s.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, maybe SP Game Use might have been $150, maybe.
Yeah.
Right? So for hockey, but generally the cost of products has gone up tremendously.
Yes.
Like it's, I mean, buying a box today, I mean, look, Black Diamond just came out yesterday, mm-hmm. I believe. Yep. Black Diamond Hockey.
Yep.
That's $500 for a pack. For one pack.
Oh, one pack. That's so crazy.
You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Yeah. But we never had those things back then,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You know, even though Upper Deck basically monopolized all the licenses back then.
Right.
Right? But we didn't have that back then. But it's changed a lot. I love the changes. Mm-hmm. I love the people who are in it. I mean, I see 13-year-old, 12-year-old kids, you know, wheeling and dealing.
Amazing, yeah.
You know, with their comps, their phones, everything. I mean, these kids are like sharp.
Yes, yes.
You know,
agreed.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I completely agree with you. It's well, I'm 46, so I've lived pre-internet era as well. And, just nostalgia coming back. I'm like, oh, I remember those days. But now, yeah, with technology, and you've just mentioned the younger kids, just it's natural to them to, you know, just use technology at their disposal. And, it's amazing to see, you know, how quickly they learn. And, kind of a second part to that question that's related. You mentioned, you know, the value of cards has definitely skyrocketed, especially with some of the higher end cards. Did you expect, you know, like when you're collecting 86 Flair Jordans, do you expect some of those cards to be the value that they are now?
No, never. Like a PSA 10 Jordan?
Oh my gosh.
Like they're like $250,000, but yeah. I think at its highest point, you know, those cards were
over half a million. Yeah.
I think 700,000 was like the top.
Yeah.
The top auction. I'm not sure which auction house did that, but it was about 700,000. But if you had told me, no chance, like none.
Yeah.
I would never guess a Jordan PSA 10 would ever reach those heights.
Yeah.
Ever.
Crazy.
Right. You know, so, but COVID did a lot too. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I'm not gonna sit here and I'm going to sit here and actually, or stand rather, and be honest.
Mm-hmm.
COVID, to some degree, inflated a lot of pricing.
Right.
And now a lot of the pricing has come back down mm-hmm. to probably the level pre-COVID. You know, a lot of it has, you know, but, you know, COVID, that's what it did. It inflated a lot. And, you know, what can I say? I was buying and selling throughout COVID as well.
Yeah.
It was very difficult, especially traveling.
Right.
And, you know, I did the national when the first national during COVID, which was in 2021.
Okay.
That was very difficult because of all the testing you had to do to go back and forth from Canada to the USA. So that was difficult. But, you know, that was the pricing. Like, I didn't control it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say the hobby as a whole controlled it, but it was just a phenomenon. I've never seen anything like it in all the years I've done cards.
I'm sure.
You know, I've just never seen anything like it. But whether it was good or bad for the hobby, I guess time will tell. But it happened. And, you know, now we're dealing with it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was a crazy time. It was supercharged everything, just like you said. And it's ushered in a lot of things too, right? Like a lot of more interest from corporations and new collectors, you know, so some good definitely came out of it even still. And one of the catalysts for change in the hobby has been, I think, Fanatics coming in and shaking things up. You know, they bought Tops. They acquired PWCC. They launched Fanatics events. And of course, we just heard about Fanatics Fest that's taking place this August. And it's just a few weeks after the national. So I'm curious, as a dealer with experience setting up at shows in Canada and in the US, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on a big event like Fanatics Fest and whether you think that'll shake things up even more in the hobby.
Buckle up.
Okay.
Fanatics is a juggernaut,
mm-hmm.
an absolute juggernaut. That show, I mean, I've done most of the big shows in the US.
Right.
But I'm not more. I'm more excited for this show than any other show.
Okay.
First of all, the line of athletes they have is second to none. Like, it doesn't matter what show you go to,
yeah.
even the national or the other shows, nobody can compete with Fanatics Stable.
Right.
No one.
A-list.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're talking about Tom Brady in there, Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
You know, they have Ohtani. They have Victor Wembanyama. They have Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot of different players that are going to be there signing, making appearances. They're going to advertise like no tomorrow.
Right.
So, like, in terms of an advertising scale, nobody can compete with them.
Agreed.
They're going to be on ESPN. I mean, I know a lot of the different things. I was aware of the Fanatics show months ago, actually.
Okay.
And I will be there as a vendor.
Oh, amazing.
And I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I can say I was at the first expo, the first Burbank show. This one here has me excited more than any other show.
Yeah.
And that's not to put any of the other shows down
right.
at all. Because
sure.
every big show has their merits.
Mm-hmm.
But Fanatics, I think, will be the force.
Yeah.
The absolute force in the hobby. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
With all the licenses they've got coming up in 2025, they're going to be an absolute force to deal with. You know, they're going to make the shows the very best. Michael Rubin, you know, wants his brand on there.
Yeah.
And his brand is just, like, essentially the best. He wants to be the best. And I don't blame him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it going to be, you know, bigger than some of the other shows? Yeah, it will be.
Yeah.
It will be. It absolutely will be. I'll be the first one to tell you that right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, what are your other questions with regards to any of the other shows? I can tell you about almost all of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the main question really a lot of people are asking are, you know, they're going to want to compare the National to Fanatics Fest. What do you think are going to be some of the big differences between the two other than, you know, the A-list athletes that you just mentioned? Is there anything else that kind of sticks to your mind?
Yeah, I believe the venues that they pick will be better than the National. Like, let's talk about the National.
Yeah.
I've done the National since 2017. This is the first year I'm missing the National, but I'll be back in 25 and 26 for the Chicago ones.
Okay.
However, with the National, it's location. Okay.
Yes.
The Chicago location is awesome for the National. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They do it great. It's Donald A. Stevens Center. The hotels are across the street. They've got wonderful food. The venue is outstanding.
Okay.
Right near the airport, everything.
Yeah.
I can't say the same for the other two locations, okay? So this one here, if we're comparing the Fanatics one,
mm-hmm.
the Splash is in New York City.
Yes.
If you're going to have a Splash, there's three locations you want to have it in the United States. New York,
yep.
California,
yep.
Florida.
Okay.
Those are the three. You pick those three, that's a recipe for success. So I can tell you that right now. That's where they've picked a nice location. It's New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Jeter's a part of this too,
right.
from what I understand.
Yeah.
So they've got, I mean, they've got all the ingredients to make an amazing show.
Yeah.
You know, I did the Mint Collective as well. That was a great show too.
In Vegas,
but, yeah, in Vegas. So, but Fanatics, I really believe those are the main comparisons. You know, it's like real estate. It's location, 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 right?
Right.
But, you know, with regards to New York City, everybody wants to go to New York.
Yep.
Everybody wants to go to California. Everybody wants to go to Las Vegas. Everybody wants to go to Florida.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you know what? They made a very good choice of New York City. They want to start off with a bang. Fanatics is doing a great job. I know most of the main people there, and they're amazing people to work with.
Yeah.
They want to run a great show.
Yeah.
And I think it will be a great show.
Yep.
Right?
You know what? In our last podcast or the one before that, we mentioned that we're excited to go to the National. Like I haven't been to the National myself, so I was kind of excited at the beginning of the year to go to this first one. But then when I heard about Fanatics Fest, my friends and I, we just automatically pivoted. We're heading to Fanatics Fest first, just because what you said, New York City, love to see. I'm actually going to be there next month on a family vacation. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to going back twice in 1 year to New York City just to enjoy the city and the show. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to
New York,
it.
New York City is a lot of fun, a lot to do, you know, where they're at, but I don't think they could have chosen a better location other than California. I'm partial to California because my sister lives there.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So, and that's one of the reasons I enjoy doing Burbank.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, that and with regards to that show, if we're going to talk, I've just moved to Burbank.
Yep.
They're by far the best show on the West Coast. I'll stand behind that. They're by far the best show.
Yeah.
You know, the Card Store is amazing. I know Rob Perez. I know Ryan.
Yep.
I know I'm very close with the family. And they run a very tight ship at their store. You know, it's clockwork. And their show, I was at the very first one. It blew me away.
Mm.
I couldn't believe the amount of people that showed up. And they've just escalated it. You know, last year, so I was at the one in February,
yep.
which was in Ontario, California. And then I'm going to the one in Anaheim. I think it's the weekend of the 25th. It's the week before. It's the week after the Fanatics show. So Fanatics is the 16th to the 18th.
That's
so it's the week after that, right?
Yeah. Since we're talking about the Burbank Card Show, like obviously see it all the time on social media. They have a huge presence in the hobby as well. And what Rob's done is amazing. You know, bringing attention to the hobby. What is that show like? You know, is it like any other show, or like what makes that show stand out?
That show. I mean, the state of California, I believe, has 30 or 40 million people, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Somewhere in there, right? But the people that show up there, it's a great diversity. They love a lot of different things, great buyers. I just love California in general. It's it's a lot more fun to wake up in sunshine. And
the weather,
than it is in the weather behind me here, cloudy and cold, right? So it gives you like a different feel in California.
Mm.
There's a lot bigger buyers there too. So
you're
going to get people that can, you know, buy those $5,000 and $10,000 cards, right? There's just the range of people who can buy those bigger cards are there.
Mm.
And it's for everyone. So Burbank, when I say Burbank Card Show, it doesn't just appeal to the extreme high-end collector.
Yep.
They've got people with mid-range boxes, dollar boxes, everything.
Oh, wow.
It's a wide range that show up there.
Yeah.
But the volume of people that show up there is unbelievable.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And they're there to buy. They're there to spend. They're there to have a good time. I've never met anybody that was bad, rude, belligerent, anything like that, right? They're
good
all very nice and kind. And I love the diversity. I love, you know, they love basketball. You know, and the people that come in there, they're from all different walks of life.
Yeah.
It's basically a melting pot, just like Toronto is, for that matter.
Cool.
And that's what makes you feel comfortable
when
you go in there. And, you know, Rob, as basically the front man, the god, I call him the godfather and the card father.
Okay.
But Rob really knows how to put on a show. He hires the right staff.
Mm-hmm.
They put on great social media. They are, I mean, honestly, I can't think of a show that really knows how to advertise. They know they do it right.
Yeah.
And it appeals to everyone. And Fanatics is going that same route where, you know, they'll be advertising on a large national scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, wait. I mean, we just saw the release a week ago, right?
Yeah.
About a week ago, right?
Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, everyone's talking about it. Every single person I know is probably going to be there.
Yeah.
I believe the majority of that show is by invite only as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not totally sure.
Yeah.
But there will be, you know, some of the biggest shop owners, show dealers.
Mm-hmm.
There will be at that show all the auction houses, the grading companies,
right?
Everybody that makes it great put together.
Amazing.
And it's sort of what like Burbank has done, you know, for the past 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And it's essentially what Expo has done. Steve Menzies and Mikey Singer, they're amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, what they've done since they've taken over that show is genius.
Mm.
I mean, they have excelled it from where it was in the 1990s
right
to modern day with the advertising, social media, you know, consistently advertising their dealers. It's really good. I yeah. really enjoy that show. I like the fact that they work with you. They appreciate you and they know that you do advertising for them. And that's what I try to do for all the shows that I attend.
Yeah.
Even if I don't attend them, I still advertise for them. Right.
Yeah.
You know, for the people who are going this year to the National, I mean, you know, the National is the Super Bowl of the industry.
Right.
So it just is. Yeah. And, you know, I recommend everybody to go to the National.
Yeah.
Right. You know, if they can, but I will, let me add a layer onto that. I recommend everybody to go to the Chicago National if they can. Right. You know, the other locations, they're okay.
It's okay. Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Again, Chicago trumps all locations.
Love Chicago, the city. I've been there a couple of times myself. So yeah, definitely National, Burbank Show. Those are both on my hobby bucket list. So I you psyched me up for both of those. And definitely we're going to Fanatics Fest this year. So that'll be a great experience. And you already mentioned the Sports Card Expo. Of course, we love it here in Toronto, in Canada. Yes. You know, speaking of shows and differences and similarities, are there major differences in between the Sports Card Expo or just the show in Canada versus the shows in the U.S.?
Yes. So there's a large difference. First of all, the Sport Card Expo has changed, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it used to be almost 100% hockey content.
Yeah.
But now there is a bit of a change. And, you know, it's not just a hockey card show or a hockey-oriented show. Now, there is still probably 50, 60% of hockey, maybe a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
But now people are doing basketball, football. I primarily sell everything, but not hockey.
Right.
You know, at my booth, right? It works out. It really, really does.
Yeah.
But they've made a lot of changes. And the key for Sport Card Expo to grow it is to get other people from other countries in.
Yes.
We want more Americans in there. We want more people from Europe in 100%. There. 100%. We want people from Asia, from all the areas, like people, like, and if we compare it to the National, the National gets, you know, they'll get people other than Americans in there, get people from the UK, from Australia.
That's true.
They'll get people from Asia. You're talking Philippines, China, you know, Japan, you know, Korea, all the, like, I've seen people from everywhere on earth come to the National.
Right.
That's what we want at the Sport Card Expo.
I'm with you.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what Sport Card Expo is working towards, where
we
want to get more than just Canadians there. Like, when I go and I advertise, like, even I'm doing one with Fanatics. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not Fanatics. Arena Club on Monday.
Yeah.
I'm here to promote, to make sure that product gets to Canada. I'm always promoting Canada.
Yes.
But the National and Sport Card Expo, you know, probably used to be like this.
Yeah.
But I promise you, Sport Card Expo is closing the gap.
Nice.
They're doing great things. And I'm always going to be partial to Sport Card Expo because it's in my backyard. I've been doing it for 33 years.
Yeah.
So I'm always going to give them a shout out. I'm always going to, you know, put them at, you know, try to put them at number one.
Yep.
But that's really the sole difference. I mean, we want to get other people in there other than Canadians.
Yes.
Canadians are great. They support, don't get me wrong. But we want the Americans. We want the people from all over the world to come to Sport Card Expo and show how great it is.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause it's a great show. The problem is, and here's the problem,
okay?
A large majority of the people from where I just mentioned do not collect hockey. And they have no interest in hockey.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's where it's been. Where, you know, you have the people from Asia, for example, or all the countries I just mentioned.
Yeah.
They're not coming to Sport Card Expo unless you got basketball.
Yes.
And why do you think they come to the National? Because they want the Kobe's, the Jordans, the LeBrons.
Right.
The Steph Curry's, all of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, UK, they want soccer. You know?
Yeah.
A lot of those guys, I know them all. I know a lot of the bigger breakers over there. And if they knew soccer was, you know, at a big point, they would come.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really about the content.
Yes.
And I really believe that. Honestly, I really do.
Yeah, no, well said. That's a very interesting dilemma. I didn't really think about it until you kind of mentioned it now, but it's totally, I feel like that's totally true. So, you know, we want Sports Card Expo to be a destination, but yeah, it's good. There's going to be some challenges to get there, but hopefully the organizers are listening and they can figure something out.
You know, I mean, I've talked to Steve and Mikey about that, and there's only so much they can do.
Sure.
But this time around, they've got some American influencers there, but different people that they're bringing there. And in all honesty, they're doing a great job.
Yep.
You know, and I'm always, like I said, for me, I'll promote them to infinity. Right.
Yep.
And that I want all the people I want to see what I see at the National to be at Sport Card Expo.
Yes.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
And I think that's doable. I think that's possible. I really feel like that can be done, and they are working towards it. I mean, you know, they work the show. It's a hard show to work.
Yeah.
You know, it's 4 days long and it's very tiresome. Nothing's as tiresome as the National, though. National is, you really got to eat your Wheaties and work out way before you go do the National. I'll tell you that right
now.
Good
tip. Okay.
But, you know, as of right now, National is always going to be the Super Bowl, right?
Right now, yeah. Yeah.
You know, right now.
Okay.
Now, does that change with Fanatics coming in the game? Time will tell.
It'll be interesting.
Right? Time will tell. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, everybody's going to go to the National every year for the most part, depending on where it is.
Yeah.
And they usually have a really great lineup. So I can't say enough about the National. I mean, a lot has even changed from 2017. Give you an idea. I could have bought Jordan PSA 10 rookies at the 2017 National for $20,000.
Wow. Oh, man.
Okay. Could have bought them for $20,000.
Yikes. Yeah.
And held for 3 years and watch it go to $700,000.
That's amazing.
I remember all like the pricing, even at the 2017 National, which was in Chicago, by the way.
Right.
I was going to the National for years before, before I set up.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen a lot of different price changes, you know, things of that nature. And the hobby's gotten better. The hobby's gotten stronger. Mm-hmm. I really feel that way.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I see the stores, they're implementing different technology. They're doing breaks.
Yeah.
They're being more, you know, customer oriented, which they should be.
Yeah.
Which they can.
A long time coming. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, people want a good experience when they're walking into 100%. A store or a show, right?
Yeah.
They just want a really good experience, and you want to try to give them that experience.
Agreed.
Too, right?
Agreed. Yep. And I think at the end of the day, those stores that provide the best experience, they're going to win out, because
they are.
I totally agree with you there. And you know, just to bring it back finally just to the Sports Card Expo, to bring it home, you know, Toronto is a great city. Most of our podcast listeners and most of the people that follow us on Five Card Guys are 90% American still. The hobby is definitely the Mecca is in the U.S. still. And we want them to come across north of the border.
We want all Americans to come.
Yes.
We want all people from Asia to come. You can, everyone. we want you all to be there. And you know what? Toronto's a great city. Why wouldn't you want to come here anyways? Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, compared to even a New York or even Los Angeles, like, it's a great, like, how could you not come here?
Yeah, it's
you've
different.
You've got great hotels. You've got great food. There's, like, there's food from everywhere on the planet here.
The world's
I'm
here, yeah.
I'm a big foodie. So, you know, I love when I go to a locale.
Yeah.
Whether it's National, whether it's Burbank, you know. What food places are around?
Me
like,
too.
Where can I go and get, you know, dim sum or where can I get, you know, I don't know, burgers.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Deep dish
right?
pizza in Chicago. Yeah exactly.
You know,
right
around Expo, you can go to many different food places. Mm-hmm. There's many different things you can visit in Toronto. Like, you know, if you're coming for a trip, you don't have to go to Expo for all 4 days.
Right.
You can go to Expo for 1 or 2 days and go to the Royal Ontario Museum or go, you know, to the CN Tower. I don't know.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Catch a Jays game.
Or go see a Raptor game or a Toronto Maple Leaf game.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, not a Raptor game. They're not going to be in the playoffs. But, you know,
November.
You can probably go see a Toronto Maple Leaf.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, but that's the thing. I think Toronto is, even though the venue is in Mississauga.
Technically, right?
Technically, it's in Mississauga.
Yeah, by the airport.
Say Toronto and, you know, all the people will have a great time.
Yes.
I really feel that way.
I can endorse that.
I, I, I'm looking for, so what day are you going to be there all 4 days at the expo?
I'm going to try to make it at least a couple of days. Yeah. I have family schedules to take care of, but I'll definitely be there for a couple of days for sure.
Well, let's do a video, a collaboration.
Sure.
I'd be happy. Guys, my booth is 522, 523 yep. at the expo. You know, we're doing giveaways. The biggest giveaway, which I don't have in my hand, we're giving away a box of Series 2, mm-hmm. Upper Deck Hobby. We'll be drawing for that on Thursday, the 25th at 12 p.m. All you have to do is follow my Instagram account, which is Sluggers55, and follow at Sport Card Expo. It's a joint venture between me and Sport Card Expo.
Awesome.
So if you follow both of our accounts, you'll have a shot at the box. And you would have to also, you have to tag one person, share, and like. And that's what you have to
Simple.
Do there.
Yep.
And also, there will be some more giveaways. You will find out on Tuesday, and we're going to be giving those away at the Sport Card Expo.
Amazing. So awesome news.
You'll have that. We're going to be introducing some other products and whatnot. So
yeah.
It'll be good. I enjoy giveaways. I do it. It's for my own money, too. So I do
That's
it. I
great.
Give away. It's good. You know, I like to give back to the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And the Series 2 box is one of the hottest boxes going.
Yes, sir. Yep. Connor Bedard. Yeah. I love what you're doing for the hobby, Carlos. I appreciate your insight, perspective, especially with all the show talk. Like, I love talking about shows because I've only gone to the Sports Card Expo just locally here, so I'm looking forward to venturing out. So I appreciate your input there, and it's been very valuable to me. And you know, just to finish off this interview, I think it's a great time now just to transition to a couple of rapid fire questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay. Awesome. So I always like to ask this one first. What's your favorite PC card at the moment?
My Star Jordan 101.
Awesome. Yeah, that's an amazing card.
That's my favorite. Like, I don't even have to think twice about that one.
That was right? quick. Yeah.
Anything Jordan is going to be in my top, pretty much. For MJ, I'm one of his biggest fans.
Yeah.
And I've been a collector of him for decades. So, but the Star 101 is something I acquired last expo, actually.
Mm.
And it's my favorite card.
Amazing.
It used to be the 86-7 Fleer. Don't get me wrong. I still love
Iconic,
that card.
Yeah.
That card's number two, but the Star 101's way rarer, right?
Yes, agreed. And definitely true. Well, the second question is related to that. I know this is a hot debate still, because every time I posted the 86 Fleer on my site or the 84, there's always comments on, like, what's the true rookie card? What would you say is the true rookie card for MJ?
So the real answer to that question is going to be the 84 Star.
Okay.
Okay, because I feel like if the card was issued in the rookie year, which Jordan's rookie year is 84-5.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's actually the rookie, okay? As long as the card was licensed, which it was,
mm-hmm.
okay, then that's really the true rookie. Now, the 86-7 Fleer, you know, came out, two years later. You know, but most people like that set because it's so iconic.
Agreed.
Right? But it's almost, I mean, we're going to have this debate about the 84 Star and the 86-7 Fleer, just like the Mantle debate.
Right.
Which we've got 51 Bowman, which is his true rookie.
Yes.
Versus the 52 Tops.
Right.
Which is the more sought after card.
Right.
And his first Tops card, which goes for far more money.
Yes.
Than the 51 Bowman.
True.
Right?
Yep.
So that's probably what we're going to be looking at, realistically.
Yes, we'll have this debate till the end of time, that's for sure. You know, you have a lot of Grail cards in your booth, like Grail cards for other people as well. But I'm curious, what's the most valuable sports card you ever held personally in your hands?
I'm going to say it was, at the time, a LeBron Ultimate.
Oh, okay. Wow.
At the time, and I think it went. At the time, it was like 150K. At the time, it's not that anymore. But
right.
At the height, it was like 150K.
Yeah, amazing right? card. Amazing card.
Yeah. So that was probably the most expensive card I've held, or I've owned, rather.
Yep. Okay.
And but I've owned other Grail cards.
Yep.
Depending on condition, that LeBron was a 9.5 true gem.
Oh wow.
With a 10 auto. And it was really in demand. It had been at its height, and it got sold there. But I've had other cards like, you know, Trout Bowman Chrome,
mm-hmm.
You know, just name it. Yeah. I mean, you know, with the exception of maybe a 52 Mantle, which I haven't really had one in a very long time.
Okay.
I pretty much had most of the Grail cards from all the sports. Yeah. And that goes back to all the hockey, too.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking, you know, Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky, you know, Maurice Richard. So you can talk about all of those.
The vintage, yeah.
And even all the modern stuff, too. And that's another thing which I'll be talking about in future podcasts or Instagram lives. People always want to know, like, what should I be collecting? You know,
yes.
And I'm going to give them some hard truths on what they should be collecting, you know,
yeah.
Because a lot of it, which people don't, sometimes they love collecting and I get it, but, sometimes, you know, for certain cards, you should wait until you buy them,
right.
You know, not buy them right away, save some money. You know, that's a big collecting tip I give people the time. You know, be patient. Wait, you don't have to get it on day one.
Right. Yeah. You know? Good advice.
You know, you can wait until the summertime, get the card. You'll probably get it for 30% less. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and that's a tip I give everyone. Just don't grab it.
Yeah.
You know, with all the hype. And we know the Connor Bedard has hype with Victor Wembanyama.
Right.
He has hype, which he should. But, you know, can you pick up these cards in the off season?
Yes. Yeah.
For a little bit cheaper? Yeah, you can. Absolutely.
Yep.
I've never seen anybody, no matter who came out, that you couldn't pick the card up cheaper, like, you know, in the off season.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's another great advice. Don't FOMO in. You know, that's
no. Don't FOMO in.
Yeah. A couple more questions. You know, you met a lot of people at shows, and you know, for your social media content, who's one of the more interesting people that you've met in the hobby, or you know, some other person's collection that just stood out to you?
The National last year, I met Gary V.
Oh, nice. I'm a big fan, too.
Yeah, I have a video posted on my Instagram. He bought Ronaldo Beckett 8-5 Megatracks for me.
Awesome.
And he came to the booth, and we did a whole film, and we were at the National at the booth. And then we went to his booth, and we did a video with myself and my sister.
Yeah.
So that was basically it, right?
Yeah. Amazing. You know? Yeah. I have his Allen and Ginter autograph card. He had one in that set that one year. So yeah, big fan of Gary V. So that's pretty cool. Lastly, you know, for all our podcast guests, we like to end with like a more Canadian centric question. So it's more fun with the Americans, but you know, you and I are both Canadians. So one thing we didn't really talk about, funny enough, is our hockey cards. Cause I don't really collect hockey cards either, being a Canadian. I'm more of a baseball card collector, and now I've become more of a basketball collector as well. But I feel like this might be appropriate. Do you have a favorite hockey card that you currently own, or a favorite Canadian hockey player that you like to collect?
Probably a Wayne Gretzky rookie, PSA 8.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
The OPG.
That would be probably my favorite. If I had to really pick one card, I mean, I have most of them, or I've had most of them, but I would say that would probably be my favorite that I own currently.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Iconic card. Definitely great to end off in that note, you know. And Carlos, again, appreciate your time, your insight, and this has been a really fun conversation, and I hope to connect in person at the expo and then at Fanatics Fest.
Please connect with me personally at the expo. Would love to do a video. Would love to do anything. Love your guys' account. I mean, I watch it all the time.
Thank you. The cards
that go up, they're always like my eyeballs pop out all the time when I see the cards.
Appreciate that.
I really appreciate it. And anytime you want to talk or you know, chop it up, I'm happy to be on.
Thank you so much. All right, just want to thank Carlos again for the interview and talking about all the shows, as you just heard. And we'll definitely be connecting with him at those shows in the near future. All right, let's finish off this episode with our regular weekly segment we call Pick One. All right, Hyung, do you have one to start off?
I do. I'm going to talk, obviously, baseball. And, you know, two young prospects that, you know, are having stellar seasons that had the biggest hype during the COVID era. And, you know, they're all, both prices tanked, but now they're starting to pick up again. And I want to know what you would pick between these two. And I talk a lot about them, Anthony Volpe and Bobby Witt Jr., right? Mm-hmm. Anthony Volpe's Bowman First Chrome last sold for $760. And just to give you context, Volpe is hitting 349 with two bombs.
Crazy.
14 runs scored. So he's having a season, a 946 OPS. And I'm pairing that with Bobby Witt Jr., who's hitting 314 with four bombs and 17 mm-hmm. runs with a 1026 OPS, though. So these two are having breakout seasons, and you've seen pricing go up a bit with both. But right now, Volpe's Bowman First Chrome last sold for $760, his PSA 10, his Bowman First Chrome auto. And I'm just going to pair that up with the Bobby Witt Jr.'s base auto that sold for $1,200. So now Volpe's 760 for the first Bowman and Bobby Witt Jr.'s 1,200. Which way are you going and why? Would price make a difference here in terms of the investment? Or is there a player that you see is better than, you know, the other, or you see someone having a better season? Which one are you picking between the two?
It's funny because I have the website 5cardguys.com, and whenever like a rookie or any player really goes off, I start to see the article I wrote, like, you know, top three player X cards start to rise in terms of the search, right? And I'm like, wow, a lot more people are looking for Anthony Volpe rookie cards now. And then, you know, I realized, like, wow, he's having a season.
He's
like,
having a season, start off. Yeah. And
yeah, so it's that's how I knew that Volpe was doing really well, because I'm seeing the action on 5cardguys.com. But to tell you the truth, I wasn't a huge believer. I mean, he's a good player, but I don't know if he was able to take that next step to be, you know, where he is now. And who knows if he can sustain it, but he's doing well right now. So good for him. At the beginning of this season, I'm on the record. I think when Chris Begg and Jason Willow, that episode, I'm like, Bobby Witt's going to be the guy. So I just sensed something. Like, he's going to have a monster season. I'm glad that that's panning out. Casey Royals, you know, I know it's early in the season, but I'm sure part of his success is propping up the team success as well. So they're doing well. The hard part for me is the price differential. $500, that's a lot for, right. You know, it, both players. I want to say Bobby Witt Jr. I believe in him way more than Volpe, but it might be that difference in price right now might be large enough that I'll just gamble with Volpe.
Right.
You know, and
makes sense.
You know, the fact that he plays for the Yankees, that's a plus half point there. And if he continues to do well, I could see it growing a little faster than Bobby Witt Jr.'s cards this year, this season at least. So if I'm looking for short term, I'm actually going to go with Volpe, believe it or not.
You know, I'm kind of on the same line of thinking. You got to remember, Bobby Witt 30-30 last season. That's what we forget. Yep. He had 49 bags and 30 home runs, which is crazy. But then he gets no love in KC, right? Like, this is kind of the issue. And right. Then with his prices being higher than Volpe's because of last year's, I think there's some not deceiving in his pricing, but there's a lot of stuff baked in already that Volpe doesn't necessarily have. So, and then you mentioning the Yankees, you know, him playing on the Yankees, if I know the Yankees are very high on Volpe too. I think he's going to be a Yankee for a long time. I think he's a very good defensive player. He could potentially 30-32. He had 21 home runs, had a bad season last year. Or people consider it a bad season because he had 209. But at the end of the day, I think the talent is there with Volpe. I remember, like I said, I bring this up all the time when we were in Panama in 2018. It's like they had CJ Abrams, Volpe, and Bobby Witt Jr. playing third, second, and short. And it was something. I'm telling you, they all can really, really play. And CJ Abrams having an amazing season too. So I should have added him to the mix. But I'm going to go Anthony Volpe as well, just based on price point. New York Yankee. He still hasn't, he has a lot to prove. So he hasn't proven that yet. And I think when he does, it's going to, you know, his prices are going to start to pick back up to where they used to be. But I brought this up purposely because, you know, these are the questions that we as investors or collectors always, you know, look look for. It's like, is he a buy? Is he not a buy? You know, and I think, you know, stuff like Bobby Witt Jr., even though he's having a good season, how much more can that 1200 grow? And what does he have to do versus how much can the $760 grow with Volpe doing what he does? So purposely did it that way so that it gives context in terms of how you purchase, how I purchase, how we all purchase, or, you know, maybe we're totally wrong, but the whole point is, you know, everybody, you know, looks at it differently, but it's just giving a perspective of how we see both situations.
Yeah, excellent points. And I'll just add one more thing while you're talking. I was thinking about, you know, he's got the narrative going for him too, right? What I mean by that is if he continues this trajectory, he's playing for the Yankees, he's playing at a premium position.
Yeah.
He's taking over another guy that retired a while ago at that position.
Right.
Squint your eyes a little bit. He's a good looking kid.
You know? Terrible. They want Jeter.
Exactly. Right. It's like, you know, if he does well, that narrative is going to come out.
Yeah,
you know,
for
like,
sure.
It's like, oh, the successor, you know, that kind of story. So, you know, narratives help in terms of even in the hobby. When Aaron Judge is going after the home run record, that really boosted his prices, not just because of the home run title, but he was chasing history and that kind of stuff, right? So anyway, I feel better about my Volpe decision after saying that. So, all right, my pick one is, I'm sticking with baseball too. We're both huge on baseball, but these guys have been killing it too, right? So you pick two younger guys that are hot starts. I'm picking two older guys, hot starts. One is Mookie Betts, the other is Mike Trout. Knock on wood. Both healthy. Mookie had a 5-for-5 night yesterday. Incredible. You know?
That's crazy.
So two of their cards sold recently for big money. I want to know which one you're going to choose. First, Mookie Betts, his 2014 Bowman Chrome, non-auto, but it is a red refractor.
Okay.
Number to 5, but it's PSA 9. So 2014 Bowman Chrome red refractor, number to 5. PSA 9 sold for $18,000.
Wow.
And on that same day, April 14th, Mike Trout's Bowman Chrome Refractor, number to 500, the 2009 Bowman Chrome, the iconic one, autograph card sold for $16,200 and it's a PSA 10.
Wow, you're going auto versus non-auto here.
Like, auto versus non-auto, number to 5 versus number to 500, Trout versus Betts.
What was Trout's grade?
PSA 10.
Oh, it's a PSA 10, PSA and it's a refractor auto.
Yep.
For what was the price?
$16,200.
$16,200 or Mookie Betts 2014 red out of 5 non auto. Man, I like Mookie Betts as a player to invest in better than Trout personally, just because I think Trout's pricing was always so high, and we're still the stages of it coming down and recorrecting and stuff like that. But Betts' price always was low, and they're starting to creep up. So I like Betts in general as a buy, but I don't think I like the card, Betts' card, better than Trout's refractor auto. So I'm going to go with Trout's refractor auto over Betts' non-auto, because I think non-autos just don't fetch as much. And don't get me wrong, that's a massive card still, because the red auto would be probably 100-200k or whatever it might be, but the non-auto 18k, it's a tough one at the end of the day, but I think the auto is what gets me.
It's an easy one for me. It's going to be the Mike Trout auto, but I thought I could get you with the Mookie Betts.
You almost did, because you're guessing.
You're more of a fan of non-autos. I know you have some really rare apparel, like you have a Bobby Witt red, you know what I mean? So I know you don't mind the non-autos, and you value the scarcity, like the numbered scarcity.
I think because the whole market values autos so much that they overpay. So I'm like, damn, I don't want to overpay for the autos. I would rather get the value.
You just described me as a collector and investor. So yeah, I will overpay for an auto any day. All right, so it's a Mike Trout sweep. I'm glad we talked about four players doing really well in baseball. That's always good to see. It's great for the game and great for baseball card collectors too. All right, well, thanks again for all our listeners tuning in to our podcast, Cards to the Moon. We appreciate you guys, and we'll have a brand new episode for you next week. Talk to you then. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at @5cardguys, or you can follow Hyung at @integritysportscards, or John at @tradeyou@recess. You can also check us out at 5cardguys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.